Welcome to a special episode of the Sean Morgan Report. I'm here with my trusty co-host, Paul Ferber, and he introduced me to Stanislas. And Stanislas Berton, he's a former CEO and business developer with a background in business intelligence and economic warfare, and realized his country was being destroyed from within and decided to do something about it, has written 4 books in 3 years, and probably the most thorough essay on Q to be found in the French language. And he also wrote a book called Making France Great Again, which is a bestseller. So Stanislas, anything else missing that you want to say about yourself before Paul takes over the interview?
No, thank you. And thank you for having me on this show. And thanks for this great introduction. And I just want to say that I'm very glad to be here with an American patriot and a South African patriot. And I think that's the spirit of the Great Awakening and what we are doing right now. I think it's great that people from all over the world, the patriots from all over the world, get together. And because we are in a global battle against a common enemy. And I think because of the difference in culture and language, it's not, we don't usually do this kind of thing, have people with different perspective backgrounds coming from other countries and discussing the current events we're all living together. So I think it's a great, I'm very glad to be here tonight. And I think it's going to be, we're going to provide great insight for your viewers, and it's going to be a bit different from usual, I guess.
Absolutely. I mean, we all have our own battles to fight in our own countries, but this is a worldwide war. And it's interesting what's going on in France, 22 weekends straight of anti-vaccine passport protests. Of course, the whole COVID thing happened. It seems like it almost happened to try to tamp down the yellow vest protests. The timing was impeccable there. And we got these draconian rules in France, vaccine passports. People feel like they have to take this vaccine to live, work, and operate in the public. And you have a new presidential candidate who is against immigration. And so this is really interesting to see him enter the scene. Paul is the one who knows you and your work. So I'm going to pass it over to him to interview you and get the most out of this interview.
Okay, fine. And feel free if you have any question and about the topics you mentioned, well, feel free to join in. I'm here to answer all the questions. So.
Thank you, Sean. Stanislas, do you think the current state of France is also part of the Great Awakening that we're seeing around the world? Because I remember before the pandemic, I was watching the French protests against the government every weekend. I mean, that was almost 50 weeks of protests. Is that part of an awakening to the people want to govern themselves rather than be governed by the elites?
Yeah, just before I get into the specifics of your question, maybe I'd just like to put things into perspective for an American audience, because there is something very specific about France, is that we are a very centralized country. It's very specific. There are not so many countries in the world who are run like this. And we are a country of 60 million people, and everything comes from the top, from Paris. We don't have states like in the US, or maybe in South Africa, I don't really know how it works. We don't have like regional government like in Germany or in Spain. It's really a very centralized country. So basically, the president has a lot of power, and the state apparatus, the bureaucracy, has a lot of power, and everything is centralized in Paris. And for instance, if the Ministry of Education decides that some rules are going to apply in schools, it's all schools all over France. So, and that means that if you want to defeat the government, you have to go to attack the government itself, the central government. You can't have local initiatives. Everything is so that I want to say that, because you have to realize that when you protest in France, you're not protesting at the local level. You are immediately protesting against the general government of the country. So that's just something I want to explain, because it's very different from what you have in the States or in many other countries. So to go back to your question, I definitely think that what we've been seeing is part of the Great Awakening. I don't know about the yellow vest, the gilet jaune, that started in 2018. And like you said, it was almost 50 weeks of protest. It was massive. I don't know. One thing that has always, I would say, bothered me about this is that it started on Facebook. And the yellow vest, they started on Facebook. And I don't know why Facebook is controlled by the government. We know that a former a government official from President Sarkozy is running Facebook France. So it's surprising that they let so many groups and so many people organize on Facebook. And that's what started the yellow vest. So it's always something that has puzzled me. So maybe one day we will know why, but it's very strange. And but it was first this movement, and then we have COVID, but I think COVID is something else entirely, because the Gilets Jaunes was more a socio-economic issue. It was more about having a fair wage. It was more against the ultra pro-market policies of the government, dismantling the welfare state and stuff like that, and the price of gas. And it was more really economic issues. But the vaccine, the COVID protest, it's more against the tyranny, the medical authority, the COVID passport. It's more against the lies of the government. It's a different, it's more, I would say, it's not so rooted in the money problems of stuff like that. It's more political in nature, and it's more dissident in nature. So I definitely think that the COVID protests are part of the Great Awakening.
Interesting. Perhaps you can tell us about the attitude in France towards Q. You wrote in your essay about Q. Sorry, I've just got it. De la guerre de l'information. You said, this is an asymmetric information war. And you must understand that if you want to understand the significance of Q. Have you had a lot of feedback from your essay that you wrote?
No, not at all, really, not much. And that's the surprising thing, because regarding Q is known in France. There are some people who know Q. There is even a website called Q Actu, who is dealing especially with Q news and everything related to Q. But Q has not, I would say that Q has not broken into the mainstream dissidents, I would say. For instance, in US, I think if you are against the system, or if you are part of the Great Awakening or pro-Trump, you know about Q. I mean, if you are a Trump follower, there is a great chance that you will know about Q and agree with Q and follow Q. But in France, there is not such a thing. And the fact is that the central issue, the dividing issue in France, is more regarding mass migration, Islam, and not more against the political establishment, the drain the swamp and stuff like that. You don't have that in France. The issue, the problems are really focused on the demographics and the disappearance of traditional French value or French way of life. So Q is not addressing topics that are at the center of the political discourse right now. And on top of that, there is the fact that it's in English first. And as you know, many French people are very bad at English. So it creates a barrier for people to interact with the Q drops, because they have to relate to depend on translations or on commentaries. And so it's difficult for many French people, especially people who don't have an education, and the simple people who don't speak foreign languages or college or stuff like that. So it creates a barrier for them to interact with Q. And And to finish that point, there is also something in France, a bit of pride, because Q says something that are outrageous if you are not familiar with the process. And for many people, it's too outrageous, and they deal with it the way that French people deal with this kind of thing, is that they just ignore you and pretend that it doesn't exist. Mm. And that's what happened with my essay. I know people are reading it. I know it's circulating, but no one is getting back to me because they are afraid that people will say, oh, wow, you are talking about Q. Oh, it's not serious. You know, serious people shouldn't deal with these topics. And this is very powerful in the French mentality, this kind of thing that you are afraid of not being serious, of being taken for a fool. And that stops people from taking Q seriously.
That's very interesting, because one of the books you've written in the last 4 years, Être Français, is about your opinion of what it means to be French and what France has kind of lost. I've seen some reviews which compare you to one of the sort of the great writers of the 19th century. You know, that there's this idea that there was this France that was lost and we need to get it back again. I think that resonates very well with some of the Q attitudes towards pride in one's country and patriotism and nationalism. You said when we started that it's great that there's patriot. We've got patriots from all around the world talking to each other about the fact that nationalism is actually a good thing, despite our differences, that we should be proud in our country and we should be, you know, we should be wanting the best things for it and, you know, fighting its enemies. So I don't know, perhaps in the future people will see that your work on Q is what they want, really. It's they just don't know it yet.
Yeah, exactly. I think it will probably resonate because Q did touch on immigration as an issue in the United States, you know,
and in Europe.
Yeah, this is really about national identity and national sovereignty versus the whole globalist agenda. So, hopefully your essay gains more traction. But part of the reason why it's so known in the United States is because of what's called the Streisand effect, where the mainstream media says that QAnon is a ridiculous conspiracy theory, and then millions of more people find out about it and research it. So, in France, you don't have QAnon being constantly attacked, so no one knows about QAnon compared to the US.
That's
maybe.
It's true, but the problem is that you don't have Q champions in France. Well, maybe I am the only one, actually, because you don't have personalities who, like they were in US, like Alec Jones, I think Rosen Barr, or there were people like that at the early days of Q who said, pay attention to this. And in France, we didn't have that. We don't have a political figure or celebrities or intellectuals who say, hey, pay attention to Q. So that's maybe one other explanation. But to go back to what Paul was saying, something that is also a problem in France is that the national ID has been destroyed. I mean, it's very difficult if you are in the US, there is still this hot-blooded patriotism that you have. You know, you have the Pledge of Allegiance, you salute the flag, you are proud of even the slogan of Donald Trump, Make America Great Again. I mean, in France, it would not work because the people of France, they have been brainwashed for 200 years or at least 50 years to be defending your country is a bad thing. And on top of that, we have something that you don't have in the US, which is Europe. And for instance, President Macron has pushed that angle, saying we don't need French sovereignty, we need European sovereignty. And so the people of France think that if we want a united Europe, we have to move away from nationalism. Because nationalism is bad. It caused the world war. And the people, especially the generation of my parents, so people who are 70 years old, who lived after the war, and even worse for the people who are older, who lived through the war, who are 90 or 85, well, they say, oh, yeah, nationalism caused the war. And that's the globalist thoughts in schools. In France, when I was a young child, We would take you to the battlefields of the World War, the First World War, the Second World War, and say, look, mm-hmm. children, this is what nationalism will bring. So there is this kind of brainwashing, and they are using the tragic history of Europe to push their agenda and to say that everything that happened is because of nationalism. So you have to break free of that. And it's completely different. There is also a hurdle that you don't have in the US, I think.
Yeah, but yeah, and that's been going on for a very long time, hasn't it? I mean, yeah, if you were taught that when you were a child at school, then it's been going on for decades that nationalism is bad. Yeah, I didn't realize it was that bad in Europe. So you've proposed some solutions for getting back France's identity. Can you tell us a couple of them?
Well, I think the first thing is actually what Donald Trump said, is that we have to drain the swamp. I mean, France is the one of the heart of the globalist machine. There are many globalist institutions who have their headquarters in France. And I want just to take this the opportunity to say something, is that Americans tend to think that the American Revolution and the French Revolution are alike. But actually, they couldn't be more different, because the American Revolution was a revolution for freedom, and the French Revolution was a revolution of tyranny. The French Revolution was a cabal coup. It was the first color revolution. And what happened to King Louis, the great king of France, is that he was ousted by the cult, by the globalists, who used the exact same playbook they are using today in Libya, in Ukraine, everywhere. And they did the same thing to the king of France.
Yeah. And do you know that the same thing happened just before Pizzagate? If you read 120 Days of Sodom by the Marquis de Sade, that is Pizzagate written in 1785. That is exactly what happened before the revolution. Yeah,
and they did a smear to the queen, to Marie Antoinette, with the case of the necklace, and it was orchestrated by the Rothschild in London. And they used exactly the same playbook, and there is a friend of mine who is writing on these things, and he said that the murder, because it was the murder of the king of France, was a ritual sacrifice. It was the most powerful ritual sacrifice you can imagine, because you have to remember that in the political history of France, the king of France is supposed to be the lieutenant of God on earth. Yeah. He's chosen by God, and it's not the king who is ruling France. Christ is ruling France, and the king is only his lieutenant. So they beheaded the lieutenant of God, and it's the most atrocious sacrifice you can imagine.
Are there a whole lot of symbols that we can look for? There'll be a lot of symbols around that. I didn't realize that.
The Freemasonry was central to the French Revolution. And when he was about to be beheaded, the King Louis on the scaffold said something very powerful. He said, "I pray that the blood you're going to shed today will not fall back on the heads of the people of France." And it's exactly what happened, because it opened the floodgates. Everything that has happened, the millions of French people who have been killed in the wars, the war of Napoleon, the war of the world wars on the battlefields of France, it's the consequence of the blood of the king that was shed in a ritual sacrifice.
Well, the Great Terror came first, didn't it?
Yeah, exactly. The Great Terror that came shortly after, exactly. So it was exactly the cabal. And it's important to know that the cult has been controlling France for almost 250 years.
Wow.
And if you go to Paris, there is this symbol, this satanic symbol everywhere.
And I find it interesting that Jeffrey Epstein, of all of the properties in the world that he could have had as a billionaire, the only ones outside of the United States and the Caribbean was in Paris, France.
Exactly. It's true. And this right-hand man, Jean-Louis Brunel, Jean-Luc Brunel,
Jean-Luc Brunel, yeah.
And when Epstein was arrested, this guy, he was able to roam free for almost a year. And they finally arrested him when he was trying to take a plane to Senegal. And we don't know what's going on with him. We don't know where he is incarcerated. Mm. We don't know if he's being tried. There is a complete blackout, information blackout about Jean-Luc Brunel. And regarding, you're right, Sean, because regarding Maxwell, not many people know this, but Ghislaine Maxwell is actually a French citizen. She holds a French citizenship.
And was I read that. Was that you who sent me that article about her? That's right.
And she holds a dual citizenship. And her family are well networked in France. She has a sister who lives in France, and they have a family enclave in, I think, in the south of France, where they have a big property. So the Maxwell are very well entrenched in France, and that's something that not many people know about.
Sure.
Yeah. So that must signify that there's a power center in Paris with the cult. If Jeffrey Epstein decided to have part of his global sex trafficking and blackmail ring right there in Paris. So can you tell us a little bit about the history of the cult in France?
Yeah, well, from what I've learned about this is actually it was it started, as you know, first in England. When they ousted also the king, I think it was James the First, and then they started to plot to overthrow France, and they used the cousin, I think it was the cousin of the king, was the Duke d'Orléans, and they did exactly what Epstein did. They used the sex blackmail, and at the Palais Royal, which was the center of the cult in France at the time of the revolution. And then they did what they always do. They started newspaper who smeared the king. They bought generals in the army. I don't want to say things I'm unsure of, but I think Lafayette, the very famous hero of the American Revolution, General Lafayette, has a very shady role in the French Revolution. For instance, he marched. There is an episode where the people of Paris have been roused by agents, and they march to the queen to the king who is in Versailles, who does not live in Paris at the time. He's in the castle of Versailles. It's like 30 kilometers from Paris. So they march and they ask to see the king, and it's a violent mob, and so the king deploys guardsmen to guard the castle, and then suddenly Lafayette arrives from Paris with his own guards, and he asked to replace the guards loyal to the king by his own guards, and then he lets the rabble, the mob, in the palace, and they capture the king. So it's interesting to when you start looking at this history of the French Revolution with the lens of the tactics used by the cult throughout history. So, and at that point, the king is done. He's in Paris, he's locked, he's under lock and key, he can't move freely, and it's over for him. And so after that, well, like Paul said, there is the terror. They start the war, the revolutionaries, they start the war with all of Europe, and they have to enlist young French people to fight, which had never happened in history. So it's a bloodbath, and the youth of France is being enlisted to fight in the revolutionary wars. And it's what happens. And then comes Napoleon after that, who brings back order. And it's difficult to know if Napoleon, what was the true, I would say the true allegiance of Napoleon, because we know that he was most likely a Freemason, but also he was at war with the British. And we know that the Rothschild financed the war against Napoleon, and it's a little known fact, but the Rothschild used the defeat of Waterloo to make a killing in money on the markets, because I don't know if you know this anecdote, but
yeah, I do know the story. Yeah, but you tell the story.
You can tell it maybe if you.
The Rothschilds had their own courier, and so when, because the battle was very close. I studied Waterloo a lot, and it was very, very close. And there was no word in those days. There was no, like, you know, there's obviously no TikTok and no live TV coverage. But the Rothschilds, the official communique came through, but it was only part of the communique, and it said Wellington defeated. And of course, the stock market immediately plunged. And at the very bottom, the Rothschilds agents on the floor of the LSE, the stock exchange as it was, bought up everything at the lowest prices possible, because their communique came in earlier, and it said Wellington defeated Napoleon at Waterloo. So they made an absolute, they pretty much took over the entire stock exchange. It was like an economic coup based on intelligence. That's the story I presume you're talking about, Stanislas. Yeah, that one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They knew in advance. They had the courier ran all across Belgium and took a boat to England. And so they knew firsthand what had happened in Waterloo, and they deceived the public about the true outcome of the battle. And there, yeah, like you said, they basically took over the London Stock Exchange thanks to that scheme.
It's amazing how hundreds of years pass and you still have the same family involved in the power center. Because it's my understanding that the French president is a former Rothschild banker. Is it true that he's beholden to them? And also, can you comment on the weird interactions he's had with Donald Trump, where Donald Trump seems to be walking him around like he's on a leash, all this weird body language, you know, maybe just a little monologue about Macron.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, regarding the influence of the Rothschild in France, yeah, basically it's since the 19th century. And for instance, you know, of course, about Charles de Gaulle, who was the president who resisted the Nazi occupation of France, and who brought France to the victory table. And his successor, Georges Pompidou, was a Rothschild banker. So you have this, the liberator of France, and the minute he's gone, you have a Rothschild banker taking his place and voting a law that forces the French treasury to finance through private banks. Because before that, the National Bank of France had been nationalized. It used to be a private institution like the Fed, but it had been nationalized by de Gaulle. And the minute de Gaulle is gone, Pompidou comes in and gives the power back to the bankers, and he's himself a Rothschild banker. So it's been at least 60 years, and Macron absolutely he's the purest incarnation of the globalist you can find. I mean, even if you look at the inauguration speech, the victory speech he did it in front of the pyramid of the Louvre, and you see a gesture. He raises his hand with the pyramid behind him, and it's the hands plus the pyramid. It's a Masonic symbol. And it's the night of his victory. It's and everything has been like that. Recently, he said to people he welcomed at the presidential palace, "The problem with you people, it was Catholics who were invited. The problem with you people is that you think that being a father is necessarily being a male." He said that. Can you imagine that? And he also said that there is a history of white privilege in France, that we must deconstruct a history. And when he was on the campaign trail, he said that there is no such thing as French culture. He said there is no such thing as French culture. There are cultures in France. And he said it basically from the start, but the French people didn't connect because there was such a brainwashing. It was worse than what happened with Hillary or Biden. All the media were for Macron. There was all the cover of the newspaper, all the TV channels, private, public. It was a global onslaught on the mind of the French public.
I heard from one of my intelligence sources that Marine Le Pen actually won, that she won 55-45, and that the votes, you know, votes were stolen in favor of Macron, which is why he's in.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know how reliable that is, but it seems likely.
I've heard something like that, and I've written an essay also in my new book about electoral fraud, because I studied what happened in the US, and I wanted to see if there was some parallel about what's going on in France. And of course, there is electoral fraud in France, and I didn't have the numbers you mentioned, but there is a Fait document, you know, the publication broke the story about Macron's wife.
you must tell Sean's audience about that. That's a very funny story.
Yeah, I have to tell the audience about that. But they broke the story a year ago or 2 years ago that there was a report from the official prefecture. I mean, it's like the regional power center of the state. I mean, the administration in each region, and they do some kind of polling for the intelligence community, for the state. It's very accurate stuff. And apparently there was a report that said that Macron didn't even make it to the second round, because the French election is in two rounds. He was supposed to be fourth. The duel should have been Fillon, which was the conservative right-wing candidate, against Le Pen. Mm. That should have been the second round of the election. And actually, Macron only got 10%, which would make sense, because his electorate is a very narrow base, and he didn't have a party. He was very young, not very well known. So it would make sense. But obviously, there was fraud, and nobody in France is talking about that. I tried, I've tried to, you know, people, I'm invited on some shows, and I've tried to say, we have to talk about this. We have to make electoral fraud a central subject like it is in the US, but people don't want to touch this, even if it's in their interest. Marine Le Pen had not said a word about this. No one is, because it's explosive. It would call everything into question.
Yeah, you're right. It is so necessary, though, that we go there, because people have way too much trust in the institutions that are completely corrupt to the core, and we need to reevaluate everything. And we're in the process of doing that in America, because it was just so blatant. I mean, they've been stealing elections for decades, but this time, you know, they stopped counting in the middle of the night. This time, they boarded up the windows and wouldn't let anyone see what they were doing. This time, like, any data scientist that looked at the results and the bellwether counties and all of these different metrics that measure the likelihood of winning and the exit polls, it was all just so in your face in America. And that's why we're forced to address it. But every civilized country needs to reevaluate whether they can trust these machines that are, you know, George Soros machines. Basically, they've been stealing elections for a long time. But what story did you say that my audience should know about?
Macron, about Brigitte,
It's about Brigitte, Brigitte Macron, Macron's wife. And apparently there was a big investigation that spanned five issues of the news outlet called Fait Document. It's a stellar investigation letter or issue, newspaper. And they broke the story that apparently Macron's wife is in fact a man named Jean-Michel.
Well, she looks like
a transsexual.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of the things that actually Paul has awakened me to, because that's how Paul and I met, is I followed him on Twitter for a year before I reached out to him. And he was always posting pictures of celebrities and doing analysis of their facial features. It's like, after you just, you know, kind of get into that realization that there are these, you know, deceptively transgendered celebrities, then you kind of see things a different way. So when you see a woman with a really large jaw or something like that, then you start to think, well, that's a possibility. And yeah, when I saw Macron's wife, it's one of the thoughts in the back of my mind.
Yeah, and to go back to your previous question about the body language with Trump and Macron, I think that Macron, I don't have any proof of that, but I think he was like handled from a very young age. Maybe Brigitte was his handler. And I think that he's dealing with a powerful figure like Trump, he reverts back to the this kind of childlike state when he's the spell is broken and he's a bit lost.
Absolutely.
That's my theory.
I think that resonates with me so much, and I've actually seen and heard of this before. For example, Britney Spears is a mind control victim, and I read a book about this guy who does pickup dating. You know, basically uses mind control techniques on women, and he met Britney Spears, and he started doing this to her, and she just fell right into it. Like she just started complying with everything that he said and did. And now that you say that, it makes perfect sense. And I'm starting to see this kind of pattern here with Jill Biden and Joe Biden, that there's always seems to be this handler in the background. You know, she's always, I mean, a lot of wives are like this, but it's especially important when it's the president of the United States and he seems to have a level of dementia and she's just telling him what to do and what to say. And he's like a robot just doing it. It's I believe your theory.
That's very interesting, Stanislaus, that you think that Macron may have an alter personality because, an awful lot of these people are groomed from a very young age. And I mean, by the age of four.
She was his teacher. I mean, he was by
the age of four, normally, is when the cult wants you within their grasp if they're going to take you as far as possible. So, you've got to be... 4 years old. But for him, on the Britney Spears thing, I've seen there's a TV interview of her up on YouTube where the interviewer deliberately, I think, and it's from ABC or NBC or whatever, deliberately uses one of her keywords to get her to change alters. And you can see her personality change live on screen.
I will link that below because I can find please, that. It's very interesting. For people interested in mind control, because there are these different commands that can cause a person to go into an altered personality.
Yeah, I would recommend, there's a lot of good books on the subject out there now written by people who were mind controlled. So, for instance, The Transformation of America, Thanks for the Memories, and anything by Fiona Barnett. These were all women, funnily enough, agents who were used as couriers between senior members of the cult. So what would happen is the way it worked is you'd get this guy would be, I don't know, a woman would be brought into the French president's presence. So I don't know who was president in the 70s, Giscard d'Estaing. And he would give a keyword and this woman would immediately switch into an alter personality. And he would tell her secrets and then he would switch her back. Now, there's no interrogation technique on earth if you don't know the keyword to get that secret out of that person's brain. It's a different personality, but she would then go back to the US or London or wherever it was, and she would pass that information on to somebody who knew, you know, the keyword. It's a fascinating look. All those books, I'll get the links to you, Sean. Most of them are available online for free. Literally, they've been released by the authors. So you can read that. But for Macron to revert into a childlike state makes me think that Donald Trump knows his keyword. He knows his trigger and is doing it for a laugh because he loves trolling these guys. He knows all their secrets. Do you remember that? You remember that at the Alfred Smith dinner where he said, he was giving the speech and he said, you know, Hillary has often said that it takes a village to raise a child, and she would know because in Haiti, she's taken a number of them. And everyone just freezes in shock. Donald Trump, the world's greatest troll, really. I love him. We need him back. What do you think, Stanislaus? Do you think that there's going to be a leader like Trump? And what about this new guy who's anti-immigration? Is he just controlled opposition, or is he real?
That would be my take, because if you look into the people who are behind the networks, it's the networks of former President Sarkozy, who was completely a cabal guy. If you look at the people who are financing the campaign or running things financially, it's people from Rothschild and from JP Morgan. And he's been interviewed, on many subjects, for instance, about the Epstein story. And every time he's saying, oh, I don't know about this. It's a pure sex thing. There is no political implication about the debts, the fiat money, all the fake money with the central banks. He says, no, it's not an issue. We have to pay back the debts. And he has been surprisingly silent on the topic of the pass. Of the green pass, the COVID passport.
He's
saying, yeah, vaccination might be a good thing, etc. But I have to what Sean was saying is that the problem we have in France is that the cabal, the cult in France, is very clever. I think they are much more clever than the US because they don't do things in your face. They are very covert, they are very stealthy, and they are masters of deception. And for instance, the candidate you are talking about, I don't want to say his name, I think he's part of that. And the people are being deceived. The French people are being deceived. And they've been deceived for centuries. And most of them still don't get it. It's a big problem you have. And the problem, there was, I think it was Tocqueville, who said that the problem with French people is that they put too much emotion into politics. And it's difficult to be rational about politics in France because it's a very emotional subject. And the people don't have cold analysis, doing their intelligence. And some people do that, but not the general public. I think it's not in our DNA. Because, you know, I have to remind you that we've been ruled for almost a millennia and more than that by a king. And there is this emotional connection to the king. It's impossible to imagine for an American, the king is a people think tyrant, but for the French people, the king was their father. There was love. Yeah. It's impossible to imagine the love there was for the king. And now we have a president, but you know, it's like a phantom limb. The love is still there, but it's been diverted to an object who is not worthy of this love, but it's still there.
So the king could say "L'état c'est moi," and the people would know that, and they would understand that, because as you say, they loved him.
Yeah, they loved him, and that's also one of the reasons why King Louis was destroyed by the revolution, because he could not understand how his children, whom he loved, would want to kill him or attack him. And there are many points where he could have just, you know, shot, fired at the crowd, or, you know, and he didn't want to. He said, no, I can't fire on my children. And he was defeated by the cult because they knew it was his weakness. And and in France, everything is emotional when it comes to politics. Politics is usually an emotional subject, but I think in France, it even more so.
Well, I definitely want to give Paul an opportunity to ask any final questions. But my final question is, what's going to be the victory for France? Because the deep state has a lot of vulnerabilities. They're not invincible. And they're getting very aggressive with this COVID passport. And French people may have been ruled for a long time, but they certainly aren't going to take kindly to all their freedoms being taken away like this. So what do you think are the keys to French, the French people taking their freedom back completely?
Well, I think that a lot of people with this third booster that is today, the day of recording this this interview, a lot of people, the people who are older than 65, if they don't get their third booster shot, their passport, their vaccine passport is shut down. So there are basically millions of people who think there are something fishy with the vaccine, and they have their COVID passport shut down. And a lot of people don't want to take the third booster. So that's something that it's quite an interesting development. And then they want to push the vaccine on kids. And it's going to come early next year. And I think a lot of people in France are up in arms about this because they don't want to vaccinate their kids. They've seen their kids suffer at school for almost 2 years with the mask on and all the madness. If one kid cough, the whole class is dismissed. It's complete madness. And like I said, France is centralized. So it's happening in all the schools in all of France. So nobody is escaping this. And And I think that's going to be the breaking point. If something happens to the kid, plus the media narrative is shifting. I saw yesterday that they started to say that maybe masks are not so good. There may be some toxic agents. They are acknowledging that the vaccine maybe don't work as best as they claimed, etc. So there is, you can see the global awakening, you know, taking root and little by little. And I think it's going to be a big scandal, maybe with a kids dying, or I hope not, but I think that would be the trigger, some breaking point. And I think we're going to have at some point a general strike, because the French, as we know, we are very good at striking. I think there will be a national strike and the country will be paralyzed. There will be a political crisis. And I think at this point, we have to be, my concern is that we don't want control opposition to take advantage of this crisis. And we have the globalist burden in different guise. So we have to be very vigilant about this. And I'm trying through my books, through what I post on social media, and when I have the chance to give a conference or things like that, a talk, to try to awake people to the fact that the true enemy is the globalist. And we have to drain the swamp. And we have to do that formally, because we don't want France to be ruled again by globalists under different guise. And Macron is just a pawn that is sacrificed, and they have another globalist taking his place.
I'm so glad that you explained the whole process that France has been through with the vaccine passport and now the upcoming booster shot requirement, because it just shows the playbook, you know, further along down the timeline that Americans might have to face. We don't even have a vaccine passport, but you know, if they do try to roll that out successfully, and then they add another booster shot and another booster shot. I mean, they're already doing this in Israel. People are forced to get booster after booster to keep this vaccine passport going. The playbook is known. And so we need, in America, because the playbook is an earlier time frame, we need to look at what's happening in Australia and France and Israel and just say, hey, wait a minute, we can't let it get to that point. We need to keep our freedom while we still have it. So, Paul, any final questions for Stanislas?
No, none for me, except that, yeah, the one you were going to ask, I think, which is where can we find all his works? Where can we find you on the web, Stanislas?
Well, you can. Well, most of my work is in French, so maybe some English speaker who want to brush up on their French can find my website.
That's me.
And they can find me on Twitter as well. Well, but I repost a lot of things. I don't know. Twitter has paid me so far. I don't know why. I'm also on Gab. And you can find my book on Amazon, I think, if you want to buy it. And there are a couple of my essays that have been translated in English, a couple of them. But it's not, it's on other subjects. It's one on economics, on the defeat of the conservatives. So it's not really political. And it's not related to Q. So, but you can find some of them. I think they are on Medium and on Substack.
Great.
This is great.
Yeah, while we're talking about Q, I can just highly recommend Stanislas' essay on Q and information warfare in French. It's called De la guerre de l'information. Just use Google Translate or whatever, or translate it by hand. It's really, really worth a read about information warfare. You'll be glad you did.
Oh, well, thank you, Paul. Yeah, and I think that all my writings is on my website. I put it in free access. So yeah, if you Google Translate, or I think you should get the gist of what I'm saying anyway.
Great. And I hope everyone, if you know someone who's a French speaker, send them to Stanislas' website and social media so they can get connected with his work. Thanks for coming on the show. And I'm also going to put links below where you can find Paul Ferber's social media and website as well. God bless all you patriots, and we see you in the next Sean Morgan Report.
Bye.